Hello, welcome to Bayou to Beltway. Today's show, we have the Secretary of State, Mr. Thomas Shedler. Mr. Shedler was born in New Orleans. He went to De La Salle High School. He came to UL Lafayette. Fortunately for us, got a Bachelor's of Science in Marketing. He married a woman who also went to school here. He served as a state senator from 1995 all the way up for full three terms. And then he went to the Secretary of State office with J. Darden's number two, and then moved up and has won election twice, I believe, on his own right at this point. He's married, three daughters, four grandchildren. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Great to be here, Pearson.
You've been Secretary of State for some time now. I imagine a good number of people have only the vaguest idea of what it is that your job actually entails. So maybe you could just start off by saying, what areas of responsibility are yours? How do you spend your days? What do you do? What are you responsible for?
Be glad to, and that is a very true comment. Number one, and the biggest job, is Chief Elections Officer. We work in conjunction with your elected clerk of court and our appointed ROVs, that's Register of Voter in each parish, to put on elections, both from local level all the way up to the recently concluded presidential election. The second facet is, of course, commercial filings. We do all the commercial filings, LLC, corporate documents for any business in the state of Louisiana. We also are responsible for some 17 museums, the Old State Capitol, the larger museum in Shreveport, and some smaller rural issues. And then we are the state archivist. Very much genealogy library. I always tell folks those buckaround-bound books in a lawyer's office we produce. We are responsible for all the notary publics, non-attorneys in the state, and on and on and on. But that's a good thumbnail footprint of what we do.
Man, that seems like a lot.
A lot more than a lot of people think, as you alluded to in your opening comment.
What's the most challenging part of your job?
I would say the election component, quite frankly, and it's not getting any easier, as evidenced by this recently concluded presidential election. You know, there's a lot of cynicism out in the heather land, so to speak, a question of integrity of elections, does my vote count, on and on and on, fueled by anger by the populace on both sides of major parties. And as we move to more technology, the threat or the argument gets even louder.
Why don't we address that directly? One of the questions that I hear, I speak to community groups fairly regularly, and what I hear from them is they're worried about the integrity of the election process. They're worried, obviously, Mr. Trump spoke quite a bit about a rigged election. Should voters or citizens be concerned about this possibility here or in other states?
Pearson, I will tell you, and of course my dominant comments center around Louisiana, but I did complete a year term as the national president of national associations, and I can tell you that the integrity of the election system, in my opinion, has never been better. Is it perfect? Is it an evolving, moving target that is a great experiment, but it's still the greatest country in the world with the greatest election system. Louisiana's system, I would put on with anyone. We've won several awards because of it. We're very unique in that we're what we call a top-down system. We own all of our own machines. We work on all those machines. We don't contract with anyone. And I think we're very aggressive with what we call list maintenance, of removing those who have been deceased or felon convictions and the like. So I think we do it as good as anybody else. We just exceeded for the first time 3 million registered voters. And we had a very vigorous early voting process, hit records at 515,000. The previous record was the 2012 second Obama presidential election, where we hit 356. So a huge increase, and it's getting more and more popular as we move forward.
Now, there are a bunch of things that you said there that I want to touch on. One of them is 515,000 early voting. That's unusual. Why do you suppose it was so high?
Well, I think it was several factors. Number one, I think this election has fueled on both sides of major parties a lot of angst. I think people are frustrated with the gridlock in Washington, D.C. I mean, the anger is bubbling to the top. So I think that fueled a lot of it. Secondly, we had great weather, and certainly you got to factor that in, the entire week of early voting. And then lastly, Tuesday election. Usually all of our elections here are on Saturdays, other than federal national elections. So a Tuesday election work day, I think a lot of people wanted to get it out of the way. I don't think there's any one heavier weight I put on one or the other, and there's probably 10 other reasons that someone could come up with. But those are the things that jump off page to me.
We just breached 3 million registered voters for the first time. I'm going to have to change all my notes. I've been telling my students 2.9 million. So what's the story there? Is that a result of increased population, or is that just something else?
No, a lot of drives. I tell you, we are participating in a group called ERIC, E-R-I-C. It's an offshoot of Pew Foundation, and we very vigorously have gone out with those voters who are unregistered that we see out there, that if we've sent out postcards into the area to try to urge them to vote. We are one of the third state in the country to offer online registration. And there were several initiatives by Facebook and others leading up to this presidential election. And one of the encouraging things we saw, especially here on UL campus, is that we registered some 36,000 18 to 26-year-olds, which was a huge influx to the voting registration. But we popped that 3 million mark, actually 3,033,000, right before we closed out registration for this presidential election.
That's amazing. Well, let's talk about that a little bit back and return back to a question we talked about earlier. People are worried about the election, the integrity of the election system. They look at the Clinton emails, which got hacked from Russia, and then they hear you say that we have online registration here in Louisiana, and they're putting those two things together, and they're saying, wait, see, you can just go and register anybody that got people in Russia. They're registering to vote in Louisiana right now.
Okay, let me explain that. There's three components to simplify it for the listening audience. Number one is what we call the commercial list. It's something that has only your name, address, party affiliation, frequency of voting. It's something that you can obtain, buy from me. Campaigns use it for a walk list, a mailing list, and the like, or donor list in the exam. You can get more on an individual going to Google that name personally. That's what happened at the Democratic National Convention, basically a commercial list. The second is the registration list, which is the most sensitive. There were two incidents, Illinois and Arizona. In Illinois, a disgruntled employee gave a PIN and code number to the list. It was detected immediately, so the system worked. There were no additions or deletions. The second in Arizona, quite frankly, it was hacked. Again, detected immediately. No additions, no subtractions. We can only assume that it was not really a vicious attack to affect elections, but just data mining by someone for information. Louisiana's system and most systems prohibit that from happening. When you go in online to deal with my online registration, you may think you're going into my database, but you're in a box silo by yourself. Someone on the other side will disseminate that information to the commercial list or the sensitive list if it's sensitive, Social Security number, change of name, and the like. If someone was, quote, hacking at that moment, they would only get your information. They would not be able to get access with the firewall into the current system. And then on the day of election, the big conventional wisdom of the Russians that were going to, attack us in cyberspace, no state in the country votes online. So I testified before Congress several times, and Lamar Alexander out of Texas, the chairman, asked me the simple question, and I was up against a Rice University professor who said he could hack into any machine and whatever. And I'll get into that in a minute. You probably could do that if I gave you the machine for a year in a laboratory. But the point being, you can't hack something in cyberspace if you're not in cyberspace. All the machines are disconnected. They're not connected together. They are cartridges in each machine. It is all a closed line system, phone line, not in space. So the thought of doing something on the internet on election day is totally preposterous. Can't happen.
Now, as I understand the process, people go to their precinct and they cast the votes on that machine. And then there's a cartridge in that machine that records the votes. And then that cartridge is taken out.
That is correct. And driven to the clerk of court that night, usually under a sheriff's escort. And those cartridges are individually put into a laptop that we supply that week
before. So it's not a laptop that somebody was just shopping on Amazon.
That is absolutely correct. And it is sent in a closed line, phone line, into the Secretary of State's office. We have various delay tactics and interference into that with coding all the way through the system. The machines have separate tapes and counters. We balance all that against the poll book and like, and even with the information that we disseminate here into the Lafayette area of our TV, there is a lag time on that to detect anyone trying to come into the line.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, this idea of maintaining a voter list, I know North Carolina, Florida, some other states have kind of gotten into trouble with the feds for going down that voter list and eliminating this one or eliminating that one. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The process problems? That is in law actually in a federal law, but also in state law, is what we call canvassing. Every other year, the register of voter is required throughout the year. If they're getting returned mail, or we get some reason to believe that that person has moved out of state from a motor vehicle department or Social Security office or something, that they no longer live at that address. Every cycle, we verify roughly 95 to 96% of the voters. So push those to the side. That 4 or 5% that's left is what we go in and ascertain to the best of our ability by sending notices into that residence. Example, my daughter who lives in, at the time, Atlanta, Georgia, we got a notice that they believe that she had moved to Georgia based on motor vehicle records. I sent it back, and she absolutely did 9 months ago. So she was removed. But this is the misinformation that's out there on that issue. Some will use that as a wedge for a base to operate from. If you are removed because of that issue, just a mailing, we find out, we don't believe you're there, you put in an inactive list. You remain in that inactive list but can vote, and you have to miss two consecutive congressional elections. So the last congressional election and then this presidential election, if you miss both of those votes and you have not voted at any time and you've been sitting on this list, as of January coming, I then remove you from the list. But the answer is you're not banned for life. It's if let's say that for whatever reason is a mistake, you go vote, you just re-register the vote. But if you do go vote while you're on that list, they look you up on a roll, they don't see you, but then they automatically check inactive, and if you're there, you just give them a new address, they update it, you vote.
Interesting. Now, let's talk about voter ID. There's some issues that people have raised about voting rights and protection of rights and disparities between affluent and non-affluent communities with regard to voting rights. I wonder, what's your position on that?
I am very much a supporter of voter ID. Louisiana was second or third state in 1997, long before it became sexy subject. We have U.S. Justice Department approval. But Pearson, the difference with Louisiana's system is this. We were a photo ID state with an affidavit process. And I always give the example, if Tom Shedler dropped the bow of the boat, his wallet, and he dropped his license in there, he wouldn't have a verification. He'd go to his precinct, identify who he is, he's in the voting rolls, he would be given an affidavit, he would test with mother's maiden name, Social Security and other, I'd be allowed to vote. In those laws that were passed in Texas and North Carolina after the Shelby case, you know, they got in trouble, they, under that same scenario, they would not be allowed to vote. So that's where you get into the disenfranchisement argument. But in Louisiana, we just don't have that issue.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break right now. We're talking to Secretary of State Tom Shedler about voting and all the things having to do with it. We'll talk a little bit more right after the break.
The world feels like it's getting bigger all the time. There are daily developments on major stories around the world and more great music than at any other time. Staying current isn't always easy. But when you listen to KRVS, you hear about people, places, and ideas that matter to you, and you discover great music every day. Your support of KRVS makes that all possible. Please make your contribution today, online or mobile at krvs.org, and thank you. Journey with me to the far-flung regions of the world, where we'll explore world music with a focus on the harp in all its various forms. That's Harpistry, Monday at noon and Sundays at midnight on KRVS.
Welcome back. We're talking today to Secretary of State Thomas Shedler. Thanks for being here.
Great, Pearson. Glad to be with you. Join the show.
Question. We're one of the few states that has the nonpartisan or jungle primary. Does that what's your view of that peculiar Louisiana institution?
It is peculiar, and I'll tell you, I've been all over the board on that one, even in the legislature. You know, we had two infamous legislators that I served with that were on the House side at the time, Charlie Lancaster and Pepe Bruno. They were best of friends, but they were 180 degrees on this subject. Pearson had always been an open primary, jungle primary proponent. I tell you what, I guess maybe it's the position I have now. I've kind of changed my tune to some degree on that. And I guess the evidence of that is as we look at the U.S. Senate race now with, well, now 23 candidates, originally 24. Certainly, we could have weeded that down in a primary between Democrats with Ms. Fayard and Foster Campbell, and I think we have two or three others, down to one candidate and a Republican. So when I look at something like that, there's probably a good case to be made for bringing that down to the two major parties. So I'm not steadfast in that, but I can tell you I've kind of weakened my position on the jungle primary. And to explain why I somewhat supported that in the past, I always found that in the closed primary you get the two extremes. And my politics was always somewhat moderate. I've always been supported by a conservative Democrat, independent, whatever, throughout my career, even going back to in St. Tammany politics before I went on the Senate. So I guess I was always a little prejudiced to that, that you pull out the two extremes and then maybe a very viable candidate somewhere down the middle or left or right of center gets boxed out that may be the best candidate because of that primary. So. But I have to tell you that with the recent large fields we've had, they've become almost cumbersome. And so I haven't totally gone into that column, but I have to tell you that the argument is getting stronger and stronger to me.
You know, speaking for myself, I feel two ways about this issue. One is I feel like as a political scientist, this is an enormous amount of fun.
You know, it is. It's from that standpoint, it's wonderful.
And people love it. You know, the idea that they would be restricted if they're a Republican for voting for a Democrat or for vice versa is just anathema to people in Louisiana.
You're absolutely correct.
From a policy and from a party standpoint, you know, protecting who is in and who is not in your party and who represents your party, it completely makes no sense at all.
Right. And, of course, it's a legislative decision. I just gave my own personal history on the subject just as—
You can't wave your wand and change that?
I can't. No, okay. They might ask for my input, but they could care less. But it is a legislative decision. And I think it will come up again. I mean, I think there's already people indicating that they are going to try to move to a close. And that's fine. If the legislature determines that's what they want to do, we're going to put on an election any way they want. You know?
Now, let's ask, speaking of elections, you're elected.
Yes.
And, okay, I got two questions with regard. Why would anyone want to run for Secretary of State? And secondly, is it weird to have an elected official who's supervising elections?
Well, yes and no. This would be my comment on that. Some secretaries of state are appointed, but not all secretaries of state have the election function. And I think the reverse of that argument, Pearson, would be, do you really want an appointed person from a current sitting governor or legislature, depending on who that would be, to actually be the ones doing that? Because then you really get a lot of political potential pressure into it. So by being elected, and I've always said, I think you could probably make the argument that the Secretary of State ought to be independent of any party. That's probably a legitimate argument. But I think because of that duty, aside from the other functions that could certainly be called ministerial and appointed, business filings and archives and museums, certainly, that the election component, it's not a perfect world for the reason you gave, but I think it's better than appointed because you do away with the influence I can be independent of, and I personally am very cognizant of that, and I run it straight down the middle. And look, I've been tougher on my own party and been sued by my own party because I held them to the line when they thought maybe I'd been because I was a Republican.
Well, I'm thinking about a case that came up. Florida, of course, is the poster child for this. When the I think it was the head of the Florida Republican Party was also the Secretary of State or head of the Elections Commission or back in 2000. Was that Catherine?
The hanging chad issue, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's lunacy. And, you know, Florida is one of those states that, you know, I looked at that in hindsight. If you think about that issue, and most states are like that, it's county-driven or parish-driven. If you can imagine Louisiana having 64 election demigods. Now, I mean, quote, the clerk is the chief election officer for that parish. But we're top-down. We orchestrate on the same laws. But in Florida that night, she must have liked the TV camera in front of her face because she really didn't have any authority. She's appointed Secretary of State. It was really driven. They should have been talking more to that county election official, that register of voter clerk, for the issue that they had with the hanging chads and the like in Broward County and others that they had issues with.
Boy, all very interesting. Now, you have to run for office. That's a statewide elected
office.
Yes,
it is. I run again in 2019. My term ends in January of 20. So I'm just still in my first 11 months of office for this second term, elected term.
Sorry to bring up that.
That's just part of it. Look, running statewide, I mean, I had run locally in St. Tammany and then, of course, in a Senate district fairly sizable. And running statewide is not for the faint of heart, and it's a leap of faith on that first time, I can assure you. It's not easy. And if I think you really knew what you were getting into, you probably wouldn't. But after you do it once, it's like anything else. A second time was a lot easier, and I certainly plan on running at least one more term.
Who do you have to – how much money do you have to raise to run an effective race?
Well, it has varied. Pearson, I have raised in both of my races about $600,000 or $700,000.
That's a figure that was coming to mind.
But there have been some that have spent as much as $1 million. I mean, you could spend $1 million very easily. Mm-hmm. But it's always usually dictated. The opponent has just as much trouble raising the money. It is a difficult position to raise money for. You know, agriculture's got farmers and landowners. The attorney general's got attorneys.
Insurance.
Secretary of State, run effective, fair elections. Just doesn't really move anybody. What can you do for me today? So it's a struggle, but I've raised in both elections about $6-7. I think when Darden ran in a much more vigorous campaign, about $1 million, I had a very tough first race against Speaker of the House Jim Tucker on that first run. And this last election, I had an opponent, but, a lesser-known candidate.
Right. Yeah, but you, of course, $700,000 isn't much to somebody who makes the salary that you make, right?
No problem. You just pull it out of pocket.
That's what I figured. Yeah,
but it's a look. If the governor's out there raising $50,000 or $100,000 a pop on one deal, I've got to have about 20 of them to raise that. You know, it's just little small gatherings of 15, 20 people for lunch or breakfast, and you just scrimp and scrape. If somebody's giving the governor $5 and maybe somebody else $25, you'll take $1,015. I'll take $250, quite frankly.
Right. And just to clear up misconceptions, your office is not overly paid.
No, so all statewide elected officials earn $115,000 by Constitution. We do get a car allowance if you so elect to take it and not use a state vehicle, which is $700. And that is set in the Constitution, and I can see no conceivable way that will be increased anytime soon. But when you look at it, it's an $83 million budget. I've got 300 employees. And when you add in the registered voters that we perform all their HR function, I have 600 employees. So it's not a small operation by any means in a comparable position. In the real world, I used to be a bank president and mortgage and real estate broker. And I can assure you in the private sector, you could earn a heck of a lot more money. My wife tells me it's the most expensive hobby I've ever possibly embarked on in my life.
She must have, I can't imagine that she would have loved that, because when you were in the Senate, you could still be the bank president,
right? That is exactly correct. I mean, it's part-time, but this is a full-time gig, so all that goes away. So I'm at the 10-day age I can do that and financially able to.
Yeah, well, that's fortunate for the people of Louisiana, no doubt. Now, let's talk about all the things that you mentioned in the very first question that I ask you. You do commercial filings as well. Did I hear the figure $300,000
a year? $300,000 total now, annual renewal and the like. And that's broken down with LLCs, Limited Liability Corporation, which is very popular now in corporations. We do both domestic, in-state, and foreign corporations out of state that do business in Louisiana.
And you've streamlined that application process.
Yes, so we have. We built what I would say maybe the third, no worse than fourth, first time in the country where you now can, when you file with me, reserve your name, file your documents, take those documents to the bank. You're also simultaneously getting your revenue number from revenue and your workman's comp number from workforce, the old Labor Department. You used to have to go to all three agencies. It's been working. We had a few kinks, like anything else, getting it off the ground. You spend a little bit more time on the front end, but you don't have to go to two other stops. We're going to be adding on things like LED, Louisiana Economic Development, to move people in that direction for grants and the like. We're looking at issues maybe with fire marshals. So as we go, we'll add that based on budget. It's been wildly successful.
Tell me a little bit about GoVote.
Okay, Go Vote is something that we came up with as GEAUX. We won an award for that, and it's very simple. On your Android phone, if you just put your name in and your zip code to that site, it'll give you exactly how you register to vote at the Register of Voters office. It'll indicate to you if the Register of Voters is getting return mail on that canvassing issue we talked about. Maybe he or she should needs an update on your address getting return mail. Then you have a mock ballot that you can vote on your phone. Doesn't count, but you can take that as a guide into the booth. Always say you know who you're voting for U.S. Senate and President, but you probably don't realize there's six constitutional amendments on the ballot. Gives you a chance to educate yourself with others. Put it in there and minimize your time. Educated voter and minimize the time for people behind you. Follow the elections that night. It also, especially for flood victims in Baton Rouge area, 65,000 people, 65 precincts, they can find out exactly where that precinct has been moved to temporarily, and it gives you a GPS map directly to the precinct to minimize your time and frustration when you're trying to go vote.
That's a big deal. One of the things that people in my business always talk about in terms of reduced voter turnout is that the registration and finding the precinct and keeping track of all that stuff is beyond some people. And
right. We think that we have minimized that to the best of our ability. I mean, there's always going to be issues. We still publish it in newspapers. We still do programs like this where we're getting out to know. We sent out notices to all 65,000 of those people. But there's always going to be some folks that don't get it, don't hear about it. But we think that we have seven states that do some form of this off Louisiana that we developed. It was very inexpensive. We did it in-house with some limited help from outside contractor, about $20,000 to maintain it.
Question. Now, I know Oregon essentially registers everybody, and then you have an opt-out system. How would that system change things here in Louisiana?
Well, what it would do, and you know, I could maybe make the argument, you know, ever since Motor Voter, you know, what we've done is increased voting rolls, and we've decreased the percentage of voter turnout. So it's really kind of an oxymoron. I've always taken the attitude, and believe me, if I didn't believe it before, when I did about 600,000 mail-outs to people who we thought were not registered to vote, the nasty grams that I got back from people that's elderly before we had identifying markers who I'm registered thought somebody was removing him from the other extreme, don't you ever send that to me again, to threats that I had to send to the state police of I don't want to register, don't you ever send this to me again. So I want to get everybody registered that wants to register. But by God, it's your right. If you don't want to register and not vote, that's your right, too. So I think it deflates the numbers artificially. I'm one of those old-fashioned guys that, by God, you know, it is personal responsibility. To get online for 3 minutes to register to vote is not that difficult. And, I mean, the spoon-feeding of everything in life to people has just got to stop.
We are closing in on our last minute. We've got to talk, but you have some museums. You've got 17 different museums.
17,
under your...
yes, sir. And
that's a relic of Fox McKithen's.
That's a relic of Fox.
He was Empire Building, wasn't he?
And it was a kind of a historic thing with people angry at New Orleans because the New Orleans Museum, Cabildo, Presbyteria got more funding. It's a long story, but we have the system. I am currently in the trying to. I've already divested and returned to local community 3. I've got 8 on target to revert by January 1st, and not only because it's the right thing to do, I don't think that state government belongs in that, but number one, we don't have the budget for it.
Yeah, and budgets are always an issue here in Louisiana. Yes, maybe next time we talk, we'll talk about budgets.
I'd love to, Pearson.
We've been visiting today with Secretary of State Tom Shedler, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Pearson. It's a great show.
Bayou de Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, and members. Programs on KRVS are underwritten locally in part by Bernard Duyon, with law offices in downtown Abbeville, serving Acadiana since 1977. The telephone number is area code 337-893-5066. Ici, on parle français.
Explore the wide range of musics from throughout the world every week here on Earthbeat. I'm Cecil Doyle, bringing you classics, field recordings, and the latest sounds spanning the globe. That's Earthbeat, Sunday nights at 7 p.m. Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. here on KRVS.
Tune in Thursdays at 7 to La Bayonera on KRVS 88.7 FM for music that'll make you want to go. Qué rico. Delicious music from Latin America and the Caribbean straight to your ears.